Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Also, our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, uniquely formulated wipes for first responders to reduce the risk. Haas Alert, creator of the safety cloud for our roads. Fry Guy Levers and Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tools for the fire service. EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. 911lifestyle.com, first responder burnout prevention and improved health. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network. The Albemarle Sweet Shop. The North Florida Fire Expo. And the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you. Happy to have you here with us. And my guest today is a returning guest, a brilliant firefighter, great teacher, and just an all-around nice guy, always willing to help. And that's Captain Mike Daly. And today we're going to be discussing the new NFPA 1700 standard. And we're going to be talking about his other passion. He is the president of Kill the Flashover. We'll be discussing that. After you listen to this podcast, if you're interested in hearing more, listening to more, well, most of your podcast platforms have our entire library of over 200 episodes there. Or you can come to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And across the horizontal menu, just select podcast, and that will take you to our entire library of audios. If you want to see the video versions that we've been doing since, I think, late 2021 now, you can go to our YouTube channel and the same name, numeral5-alarmtaskforcecorp, and you'll be able to watch all of those to your heart's content. And while you're on the website, maybe you'd like to sign up for our newsletter. We have one probably coming out next week, and we don't send spam. We don't give away your email addresses or sell them. Can't believe in that at all. We protect them to the best of our ability under federal and state laws. And should you ever wish to unsubscribe, all you have to do is send us an email to dalmatprod@outlook.com, and we'll take you off the list right away. Now, we also want to thank all our friends and those who give us likes on Facebook. I did not have a chance to get there this past week, but a week and a half ago I was, and just amazed. And we thank you. We are so happy to have you with us and know that we have your support, both on the podcast, and hopefully you've been giving us some support for our nonprofit to let us help our brothers and sisters in the fire service when they find themselves in dire need. Now, many of the platforms that you listen to the audio version of Five Alarm Task Force provide you the opportunity of leaving like star ratings or a couple of sentences. And that's very important, not just to us here at Five Alarm Task Force, but to all podcasters, because the platforms have an algorithm that they use when people are searching for a new title. And if you don't have some good ratings and good sentences in there, then you're going to wind up low on the list. The more stars you have and the more positive comments you have, the higher up you're going to be on that list. So we ask you just to do us a small favor. It doesn't cost you anything other than a couple of moments to just leave a star rating for us on your platform or a couple of positive sentences and or constructive criticism, because we want to be sure that we're bringing you the types of programs you want to listen to. And that's it. That's the business for today. So we're going to be right back right after a couple of words with our guest, Captain Mike Daly, as we discuss in segment one, the new NFPA standard 1700. We'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here are a couple of their upcoming appearances. May 10th through 12th, 2023, at the Charleston Coliseum and Convention Center. Registration is now live for the West Virginia Public Safety Expo, which is an annual event in Charleston, West Virginia, that gives public safety officials an opportunity to network, obtain training, and enhance their skills in a centralized location with some of the best resources in the country. Way back in 2012, the expo saw approximately 500 participants over the course of 5 days, and we're sure that's grown since then. James City County Fire Department. Insight Training will be providing a full day of customized training for James City County Fire Department on May 16th. Insight Training will offer the following program customized to the department's specific requests based on the top three choices submitted to Insight Training for thermal imaging cameras testing. Insight Training will offer a presentation explaining the advantages and disadvantages of each TIC in a classroom session 2.5 hours in duration. Once the classroom session is completed, the students will be informed of their expectations, provided a lesson plan grading matrix, and escorted through a series of objective-based evolutions. They will then grade each TIC during a max firebox, followed by a live fire demonstration. This training will be 8 hours in duration total. Please be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built the path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 key attributes of the well-rounded firefighter, and 6 tips to guide the new fire officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.thefirehousetribune.com or email us at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Service, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. Like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan Wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you here with us. If you're joining us on the video, welcome aboard. Glad to have you with us. If you're listening to the audio podcast, glad to have you back with us in this segment. You heard the intro before. And our guest today is Captain Mike Daly. He is a 35-year fire service veteran serving in a department in Monroe Township, New Jersey. The captain serves as a staff instructor in two county fire academies, is an adjunct professor at two county colleges, developing and delivering FESHE-approved curriculum in fire behavior and building construction. He is a 20-year member of the New Jersey Task Force 1, USAR, serving as a rescue squad officer, and is a FEMA lead instructor in the Structural Collapse Specialist Program. Captain has a bachelor's degree in public safety and holds certifications as a fire officer, fire instructor, fire official, FEMA All-Hazards Operations Section Chief, on-scene incident commander, fire investigation technician, certified fire and explosions investigator, and has completed the Knowledge Fire Dynamics Program from the International Association of Arson Investigators. He has earned international accreditation as a chief training officer and a fire officer from the Center for Public Service Excellence. He is a member of the Institution of Fire Engineers and serves as a contributing technical editor for Firehouse Magazine and Firehouse.com. He is currently serving as president of Project Kill the Flashover, a training and research organization that provides training in advanced fire behavior to students from all over the world. He can be reached, and we'll repeat this at the end, at the email F as in Foxtrot, S as in Sierra, P as in Papa, C Charlie, educators at gmail.com. Captain, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Five Alarm Task Force.
Well, I always appreciate the invitation, Steve. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Our pleasure. And we have two good, really good topics we're going to be discussing today in our two segments. Segment one, we're going to be talking about the new NFPA standard for 1700. And then in our second segment, we're going to get back to the concept of kill the flashover and how important it is. So, Cap, let's get into 1700. We know that there's been a lot of discussion about it. We've seen it on social media by lots of people. Hopefully, most of them were actual firefighters and not the ones who sit in the basement at the age of 36, just waiting for mom to cook dinner and typing to make believe I'm a fireman. So let's address it for those who are the professionals, whether they be volunteer, career, or UI. We all need to know what this is going to be about.
I would agree. I took a look at the document when it first came out. It came out about 4 years ago. It's actually starting to hit the renewal, and NFPA is actually combining that document with 1710 and 1720. You're going to start to see these mega documents that are coming out in a lot of different categories. 1700 isn't absent of that as well. So it's going to be mixed in with a couple other documents as well. It's It's a very thorough document. It's only about 34 pages, but it is really, really well put together. It's got a lot of information in it based on a lot of the science that the UL and Fire Service Research Institute's been doing over the last few years. It brings the science in with the fire dynamics, discusses it, brings construction into the mix as well, and then puts it together in the later part of the document with the changes in strategic decision making and some of the tactics that have to be implemented based on a lot of what we see on arrival and the response that we have coming to that first alarm. Now, it doesn't really matter if you're a career volunteer, wildland, urban, interface. It really doesn't matter. The document doesn't predicate one over the other. The document says, here's what this is, here's what the science is telling us, and here's where the fire service needs to be to address it. And if you don't have this many people, then this is how you address it. Or if you're dealing with a building like this, this is how you would address it. And if you're thinking about changing these and moving these tactics to this, which is going to take some time for the fire service to do that, any organization, here's how you implement it. You know, one of the things that a lot of people have always complained about the NFPA standards is they come up with some great information. You have to agree. There's a lot of great stuff to use
Absolutely.
NFPA. And I'm an advocate of it as well. I sit on the actual committee that does fire control within a structure using fire dynamics as well with Brother Andy Starnes. And the reality of it is many of the times we see standards and a lot of people have always told me, well, you know, NFPA standards are great, but the problem is they never come up with an implementation plan on how we would implement these things. How do we do that? How do we? It's great to have these rules. It's great to have all this information. It really is. What do we do with it? Well, one of the great things I think about what 1700 did was said, here's the information. Here's how you need to make the change. And here's how we suggest you implement it. So the last two chapters are really focused on implementation, how you bring all the players together, how you bring the resources that you would need, where you can find these resources to actually start to look at putting these changes into place and how you'd be able to pull that off. So to me, it's a very thorough document, although it's not very big, but it's very thorough and it references a lot of the other documents that NFPA already puts out. It references 1710 for career departments and it references 1720 for volunteer departments. And it doesn't discriminate from one or the other. It says, okay, if you're still dealing with a garden department fire, a three-story garden department fire, and you have a fire on the first floor communicating to the other two floors, here's how you have to handle that. Whether you're career or volunteer, now it's really up to you how you decide to get those resources and that material into place, into operation, and how to do that. So it still provides direction on what you need to do, but there has to be some flexibility because every department responds differently. How I respond would be different than how you would respond. You know, a metropolitan department's going to respond much different than a smaller career department than we will. Volunteer departments all over the country are going to respond differently than how some of the career departments would respond, and some of the volunteer departments all over the country are going to respond different to how some of the other volunteer departments all over the country respond. So there's got to be that point where there's enough flexibility so every department has a way to make this happen. And I think the document's thorough enough to do that. I really do.
That's really good to hear because I know that over the years, even since I've been out and just affiliated from the outside back in, I've heard the same kind of comments that the NFPA does come up with some really good stuff, but they never tell us how to do it in our department. Now, of course, they can't, you know, compartmentalize for every individual department, but the fact that, as you've just shared, that this revision of 1700, picking up 1710 and 1720, does have a really strong implementation program for both the career and the volunteer departments. And I think that may give it a little more liking by the people, more acceptance to say, wait a second, well, they're really telling us what we can do based on the number of personnel we have responding on, number of pieces apparatus that are responding. Wow, we can work with this. Now we just have to figure out a way to get into that gel and make it work for us. And I think that's great news to hear, especially in these changing in troubling times in some ways for the fire service with our problem with, you know, retention and recruitment. So I'm glad to hear that. And by the way, that reminds me, in today's email, now we're recording this on Wednesday, May 3rd. I received this morning, or may have been from last night, but the new NIST informational sheet on PFAS and the investigation they've recently done. It's really interesting. Those of us who've been in this PFAS fight might really benefit from what I read just in the blurb today, but I found it very interesting, and I found it comforting because it's kind of helping us reduce that fear factor that we've had since we've discovered that PFAS has been on our gear since 77. And there are going to be ways, some of them relatively easy, to make that change. So if you haven't had a chance, folks, look it up. It's the NIST. It just came out either late yesterday afternoon or early this morning, and grab that. So let's then get back now, with that being said, to the NFPA and some of the high points that you really feel need to address with our listeners and our viewers on some of the key issues and the implementation thoughts.
So let's talk about what you just brought up, Steve, because I think it segues very good into one of the chapters. There's actually a chapter in 1700 on hygiene and exposure. There's a huge part of that document that covers hygiene and exposure. And we're talking about the things that we should be doing and then the things that we could be doing better. And I, for example, should be doing. How many times, and I think we've all seen this, you can take the cover of any magazine, or you can look through any fire trade magazine or document or newsletter that you get. And we always see, excuse me, we always see somebody doing something that's probably not the smartest thing to do. I hate to say it, but if we're going to talk honestly, we have to talk honestly. And I've never talked bad about any other department before I talk about myself, my other department. But the reality of it is we've all seen it, whether you're watching a university or YouTube, or whether you subscribe to a trade journal, or you get a newsletter sent to your fire station. And the reality of it is the things that we do really drives through tradition. So for example, I wear a leather helmet. It is tradition. You want to talk about traditions? We can argue leather helmets. We can argue fog nozzles versus smooth bores. But I wear a leather helmet because when I look at the study on impact and protection to your head, it's probably one of the best helmets to wear. And granted, there's some traditional look to it as well. But when we look at turnout gear and what we respond in and what we wear and how often we clean it and the things we'd be exposed to and when we go on air and when we shouldn't be on air, you know, it's all really laid out in this for us through 1700. And I'm just going to give kudos to, you know, Chief Starnes and Chief Oak and Chief Coy and Chief Whitley, who started KTF. We used to decon in the street after every test burn. And we actually worked with the Firefighter Cancer Network and sent that material out and had the water from the decon. We used the decon with just water and decon with soap and see the difference. We would knock almost 88% of the contaminants off the turnout gear in the first rinse. So if we're not even doing that on the scene, I did that on the scene one time about 5 years ago on a mutual aid alarm. I had a new firefighter that got hired, and we're 4 months into it. We caught a mutual aid assignment into a neighboring town. We come out and I asked for the bumper line just to wash my guys off. And I was first. They washed me off first. Would you believe it? By the time I got back to my firehouse, my chief had gotten a phone call from somebody who was at the scene that said I was hazing my guys. Believe it or not, I was rinsing the contaminants off them. They were serenity hazing them. Those are the things we could be doing. The simple, rotate your people in and out, limiting the exposure. How do we do that? Well, we need personnel to do it. How do we do it? Even on the instructor side, it covers training. What you do with your gear and training covers what instructors should be doing while they're doing live fire training, how many they should be doing, how to decon your gear immediately. You know, it's all there just for that alone. Now, even we've changed some of our responses that we don't go full gear anymore. We bring our gear with us.
Right.
But now we're limiting the amount of time we're going to spend in the gear. And that's going to be a department policy that's specific to every department. But that's just one example. One of the things that I really like about the document is it brings the science to what the UL and the FSRI is doing and says, here's why We need to make these changes. And we got to stop overall fighting today's fires like we fought them 40 years ago.
Right.
With different fuels. We're dealing with higher heat release rate fuels. When I got into fire service 35 years ago, we were fighting fires in relatively stable buildings with legacy fuels that put out about 8,500 BTUs per cubic foot of fuel. We're now dealing with lightweight construction and different types of construction techniques with high heat release free fuels that are putting out 18,000 BTUs per cubic foot. We're putting them in houses that are well over 3,000 square feet, where we had them in houses that were less than 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. We've insulated these houses better. There's more air available in these larger houses now. We can see dynamic events within the compartments themselves before a pane of glass is even broken or a door is even forced. So the science is there. It's proving it. And it discusses what the exposure is, what you can expect to see based on these fuels. It's full of the information from the tests that they're doing. A lot of the information is available on the FSRI website with free training for departments. I mean, I'm putting my whole department through it. There's 24 classes. I'm doing one every other month just to introduce them to the science, bring them up to speed, because it's going to take a few years to get the change to move. So here's the training. Here's the document. Here's the proof. So the science is there. The fire dynamics itself are actually explained in there as well, what they expect, what they anticipate. Pretty accurate as well. And then it goes into construction. Now, I teach construction at the college level, and unfortunately, they have to listen to me talk about construction for 15 weeks. But and one night is a specific type of construction, whereas the document brings the construction to the reader, but it doesn't spend the time on explaining it. What it does, and I think it does a very good job of this, every different type of construction has a specific problem for us. For example, type one constructions, the biggest issues that we have with those, vertical shafts for egress, usually drop ceilings due to the mass steel and concrete, occupant indifference from people chalking doors open where they shouldn't be left open. Where type twos, unfortunately, with their type of cold drawn steel roofs and lightweight steel truss, steel bar joists, collapse very quickly. Type fives, full combustion of the gravity resistant system. Type threes, with void spaces due to the introduction of wood into masonry materials. Every one of them has their own specific nuances that we have to deal with. And the nice thing about this document is it covers each one and says, here's where your problems lie. Here's what you can expect when you have a high energy event in a compartment, and this is what you should anticipate based on that construction. So it doesn't get into the whole loads and forces and stresses versus strain, but it does say you're going to have these buildings, and here's what we have proven that happens in these types of buildings and how to deal with it. So
you know, you mentioned the looking back at the legacy time, which was my time and starting in 77, I think one of the biggest changes, and you mentioned about the change in type of fuels, because my day we had real wood furniture. The cushions were filled with Kapok, not with a butyl foam, you know, benzene laced foam. But the incipient stage, I remember my first class, state fire college class, tossed the incipient stage then was 4 to 8 minutes. Today, we're looking at 2 to maybe 5 minutes for an incipient stage to move and ignite. So if we're not there and we're not ready with water, you know, we've all talked about fast water, but not everybody believes in it like a lot of us do. But yet you can see the videos, some really good videos that get posted. We have fast water, whether they use the deck gun itself right off the bat, or they got a 2.5 out right away. They went in with 2 inch 3/4. The fact is, fast water makes the difference. And especially with an incipient stage so drastically reduced, if we want to stand a chance of knocking this down before it gets away from us. We have to be there, be ready, and do what has to be done right away.
I would agree. And I didn't come into the fire service much later than you did. So we fought some of the same type fire. And one of the things about that, and I think you bring up a good point, is time. Legacy fuels do take longer to get to a free burning or a flashover state compared to what we're seeing as high heat release fuels today. Problem with what we found back was we would get to a fire while it was still in the growth, getting into that free burning stage. Today's responders are getting to an incident well after the compartment has either flashed or has spread to another compartment or has breached the compartment and somebody from the outside has seen it. So it's already gotten to the point where it's being reported from a passerby. Well, we're well off into the races now with the newer fuels and the newer construction. So, yeah, time is everything. And how you bring that to the scene, what your response package is to the scene. And that's going to vary now, unfortunately, even on residential dwellings. Now, we kind of segued a little bit into it. And this is a good part, I think, to bring up now the changes in the strategy. We talked about the changes in the fuel. One of the things when it comes to strategic considerations, it's always been about science. Whether you agree with it, you don't, fine. And I'm going to tell you, fast water is good water. I said this all the time, the fire doesn't care about where the water comes from. And I can tell you, it's been my experiences when it comes to victims. Mrs. Smith might be laying on the floor in her nylon nightie where it's 300 degrees and she's not on the floor praying, boy, I hope they go offensive. She has no care whatsoever about how that water gets into that room. All she cares about is that it gets in there relatively quick. So the changes now address that. And the reality is we have to change strategy because the science, the fuel, the air, the energy that's being put off, and the compartment. Now, everybody talks about the science, and I think one of the great things about this document is it focuses on compartmentation as well. It's one of the things that we talk about at KTF. One of the questions that we ask in the first semester, we get a bunch of seasoned firefighters together, and the first question we come out with is, fire behavior changed? And we get yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, really? Okay, tell me how. Well, we get more energy. Well, that doesn't change fire behavior. It just changes the amount of output of the process. The output changes, but the fire behavior hasn't changed. Well, we have more fuel. All right, so quantity doesn't change the science. The science is still there. It just has more fuel. And more fuel can be good and it could be bad. I mean, depending. Well, we have more windows to break so we can ventilate it better. Well, it doesn't change the process. What a lot of people miss, and this is really key for the science, is, and I'm going to quote Alan Brunicini because I had a great opportunity in my career. I tell people this all the time. One of the greatest moments of my career that I always go back on is I got to have dinner with Alan Brunicini and Tom Brennan at the same time. Now let me preempt that comment by saying I was in a room with 30 other people. So I just happened to be sitting across from where Alan Brunicini was. And it was probably about 18 years ago. We were in Reno. I was brought out there to do some firefighter survival training with a good friend of mine. We were all sitting there talking, we were eating. And one of the great things about Brunicini, I always thought, was he very rarely talked, but he listened to everybody. He didn't care where you were from, didn't care about your experience. He always felt that everybody had a respected position on where they think the fire service should be. Oh, and here I am, Jersey guy sitting across from one of the legends, and I didn't say a word. All I did was kept my ears open. And we got to talking about fire behavior and strategy, and he had said something that I thought was brilliant. To this day, I still quote it. He said, "Nothing ruins a good fire like putting a building around it." And I said, wow. I mean, you know what? And he really kind of brought that to light to say, this isn't about the construction. It's not about the science. It's about the science when it hits the compartment. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people miss. It's the compartment. It's the compartment. How does the compartment react? How does the compartment influence the behavior that's actually going to happen? Because when it's outside the compartment and there's no roof and there's no walls, all the energy goes up and away. We don't care. Well, the minute that we put four walls and a ceiling around it, well, now That's changed because now the energy that's reinvested into the fuels allows for faster spread, rapid fire growth and propagation to other compartments, faster energy transfer to the building itself, the gravity resistance system of the building itself. And now what a lot of people miss is it's not about the science, it's about the compartment. And that's one of the things that we really start to talk about when we start doing more fire behavior training, especially with kill flashover. And that's why the strategy is important. One of the big changes, there's two big changes, I think, in the strategy part of this document. And one of them has everything to do with who you're bringing to the game. 1710, 1720, doesn't matter. Here's the thing. NFPA says the first arriving assignment to that structure fire, and this is based on 2,000 square foot house in the middle of nowhere. No exposures, no basement. Doesn't matter if you're career, volunteer, part paid on call. If you're wearing turnout gear and you're responding on an initial alarm, your job is to get two lines in service flowing 300 gallons a minute. Period. Doesn't say only the paid guys have to do that, or only the volunteer contingency has to do that. Doesn't say that. It says here's what you need to do, and you need to coordinate it with ventilation now. And if you can't do that at the same time, and this is very clear in the strategic considerations of this chapter, if you cannot coordinate that and do those simultaneously, you will now do it sequentially, which means your focus is now on suppression. And you led into a great point about transitional attack here. And I am a firm believer in it. And I've practiced it, I have video to prove it. And we use it when necessary. We are, and for the life of me, I get these departments that talk to me about suppression. We do strategy and tactics talks. I was actually one of the academies I teach at. I teach a modern engine company tactics, and we talk all about strategic decision making and fire and application of water. We show them the difference when we get out onto the burn pit. I get this all the time. Well, what about pushing fire? I got bad news for you. This is everybody says this is a Mike Daly original because everybody uses it. You can't push fire you put out. If you put the water in the right spot, like you're trained, the right angle, in the right flow with the right amount of GPM to absorb that energy, the fire goes out. Period. You know, and I get departments that tell me, well, you know, we're traditionally an offensive department. What does that even mean? We all are, unless the situation dictates that we can't. Right? And the difference here is being able to take that strategic consideration on that compartment based on what that building's in and how you're going to apply that. So transitionally, yeah. Offensively, sure. Defensively, yeah. Can I change my mind halfway through? Absolutely. The fire behind me that you're looking at was a fire in a mutual aid town. Started out defensively, went transitional, and pushed in offensively. So we did all three. You know, does it happen? Sure. Why not? Because the situation dictated it. First engine in. We were the first engine in. It wasn't my shift. I'm going by what I was told. First engine in, large house to the left, as you can see, fire in a garage. Four firefighters showing up. What are we doing? You know as well as I do, we're not putting a line through the front door. But what we want to do is we want to protect the residents. So we protect the residents. Firefighters did an excellent job keeping the fire in the garage. Unfortunately, the garage was a loss. But based on the considerations that were made, very good decisions. And it works. And it works.
You know, Kevin, former Deputy Chief Kevin Burns from Framingham, Mass, which is my hometown, now a city, a great guy. There's only a couple of years that separate us. We went to the same schools. We were there at the same time. We didn't know each other as kids. But the fact is that he's been great on social media, and he's done a couple of podcasts with us. And I asked him when a couple of years ago, when there was all that kind of very caustic debate about aggressive and transitional and defensive. So I asked him, I said, Chief, you know, I know the buildings in our community from when I grew up there. If you had a working fire, which attack would you use? I mean, do you think it all have to be aggressive? He goes, Steve, I have three words. It all depends. He goes, I can go down to 12 Main Street on a working fire. Everybody's out of the house. All the pets are out. Everything is safe. And I can know what kind of attack I can do on that house from my size up. And then I give my primary assignment to the first new apparatus. He says, but two nights later, I could be at 14 Main Street. And they're not everybody's out of the house. We don't know where they are. I have to hold. That's totally different. He says, so I can't say to anybody, to you, or he goes, he said, to, or anybody else, that one is the one to use, one method is the one to use with every call. You can't do that. And that's where your good first incident commander, or if it's the officer in the first arriving apparatus, has to know how to make those decisions for what's best for life and property.
Yeah, I would agree. Chief Burns actually spent a week with us about 5 years ago down in North Carolina with KTF. A wealth of information, true consummate professional, still keep in touch with him. And we have the same mindset. I'll actually cut his opinion down a word instead of three. I use two all the time. Would you go offensive or defensive or transitional? Definitely maybe. And it's and I think Chief Burns says it the best. Depends when I show up. What do I see? What do I see? What do I have behind me? And again, nobody's saying you have to do anything in any specific way. And some departments are like, well, our policy is to push through the front door all the time. Why? It just doesn't make sense. It all depends. It really does depend. I mean, if I have the same volume of fire coming out of a single family residential dwelling that's 1,800 square feet, and I have the same volume of fire coming out of the middle store of a strip mall that's a type two construction, single floor, single story flat roof, my entire thought process is going to change. And my tactics are going to change based on the compartment again and what the actions around it are. And, I guess we all would love to be able to say, and I'm sure you would agree, we'd love to be able to say, well, when you show up and this is happening, you do step A, B, and C. Be great if it always worked that way. It doesn't. Nothing we do works that way. And it's not just in the world of fire suppression. My department performs technical rescue as well. Perform technical rescue with USAR. I've been a rescue guy for the last 28 years or 30 years of my life, local fire departments and on a FEMA task force. No matter what you do, you show up to an extrication. What do you cut first? It depends. I show up to a rope rescue. Where's our anchor? It depends. I show up to a confined space job. How we make an access? It depends. It always depends. We'd love to be able to say there's always a step one, step two, step three, but there's no document in the world that's going to give us that. We can't even do that in our own policies. I can't even do that in my own policy unless I'm doing something specific in the department. The flag always goes up at 7 a.m. The flag comes down at dusk. That's about as definitive as we can get. But when it comes to operational decisions on a fire ground, it just doesn't happen. Now, strategically, we have to start changing again because the compartment's changing. So one of the changes that I think is big in this document is when it talks about, and it talks about different applications. It talks about residential structures. And it talks about apartment buildings and single and two family, multiple dwellings. It talks about garden. It talks about townhomes. There's a part of this on all of it. So here's where your thought process should be. The one thing that I think is very important for a lot of people to understand, this document makes the difference between an estate home and a residential dwelling. Estate home is anything greater than 3,000 square feet. Now, that's going to be a problem for a lot of people because there's a lot of people that have houses that are well over 3,000 square feet. I can tell you a street that's a half a mile from my firehouse has seven houses on it. It's a courtyard. The average size house on that street is 12,270 square feet. That's, you heard me, 12,270 square feet. I will not fight that fire exactly the same. I don't care if it's a bedroom fire in that house versus a bedroom fire in an 1,800 square foot house. You are not doing the same tactics. It's just not happening. And it has to be based on the compartment. And the nice thing about this is, well, what if you have a strip mall? Here's how you should address that. What if you have a medical office? Well, that's how you address that. What if it's a theater? Here's how you address that, places of assembly. The document's pretty thorough there, and it covers that. Now, it doesn't write your policy for you because it doesn't know what you're bringing to the party. It's just not what it is. But here's where your thought process should be. And if you can't do these things simultaneously, then you have to figure out how you can do them sequentially. Sequentially, the first thing that has to be done is suppression. Tom Brennan said it the best. And Andy Fredericks, I believe, said it as well. Once the fire goes out, all your other problems seem to be secondary. Everything else seems to get better. It's true.
Sure. That's a great point. That really, it really is. And hopefully we're going to be seeing in some of the people who have been studying KTF and really do pay attention to the concept of tactics and don't just rely on that's the way we've always done it. And we'll have more and more of them as the younger group starts coming into their time, into their prime, maybe after 10 years in and stuff like that, replacing our senior people today who are getting ready to retire out over the next five to 10 years as well. We can't, it's difficult enough as it is right now with retention and recruitment, but it's a great point to understand that that is a strong reason why we can't just go with opinion and history. We have to be able to look at what is burning, what is happening at this moment on that call, focus on that and do the best you can at that point in time. And whatever it requires you to do, maybe part of it comes from your legacy operations that you've learned, you know, 10 years ago, but some of them are going to be not those, some of those will not be applicable to today because of changes that's happened in those 10 years. So I think that there is no doubt that we can hope for, as this document is shared and read and understood, because a lot of people read, not necessarily understanding and buying into it, but those who do read this and learn from it can bring a higher professional, I'm trying to think, professional exercise to the dance. That's what it's about. Because
you know, you bring up a lot of really strong points, and you are 100% on the mark, Steve, because there are points that have to be addressed with this. Brother John Dixon, who I'm sure you're familiar with, John and I do a lot of training together. We do a lot of fire behavior training together. One of the things that he always preaches is you can have your own opinions, but you just can't have your own facts. It just doesn't happen. And if we talk about change, which is kind of what we're leading to, and you're right on, the fire service members hate two things. One, change. Two, the way things are.
Right.
So you can come up with the solution. Oh, why do we have to do that? Well, you don't like that. Well, yeah, but I don't like this either. Okay. So problem is the implementation. And you're right. How do you get people to change? Because we can take this information to that recruit whose mind is raw. It's impressionable. Chief Avila in his book talks about unconscious incompetence. You didn't even know what you don't know. And then you found out you didn't know. So then you become consciously incompetent. I can take all of this information over the course of hundreds of hours of recruit training and drive this point home to those new members of the fire service. And then they go back to the ones who have not done anything since they've either been appointed, promoted, deputized, whatever we're calling it. And then, unfortunately, we hear those six devastating words to the recruit. That's not what we do here. And all that information that we give them starts to leak out of their brain because they start to develop the muscle memory that the department wants them to do. So for us, I believe, and this is where I think the document covers this as well. How do we implement it? Well, here's the thing. We have to get everybody to the table. And this isn't just the firefighter, the officer, the chief. This is automatic mutual aid departments. This is fire academies. This is everybody. And I posed this question at this chief conference that I talked at 2 weeks ago. I said, all of you that got promoted in the last 10 years raise your hand, and probably the better part of 75% of the attendees raised their hand. And I said, okay, if you've read a fire service tactic books in the last 3 years, raise your hand. And probably an eighth of them raised their hand. And the reality of it is things change. Fire service is a dynamic, changing occupation. Career volunteer, it's an occupation. Call it a profession. Right. Whether you get paid or not, if you put the gear on, that's you're a firefighter, period. And I can tell you that my department is going through a captain's test right now. That test is going to run in December. I'm reading the books. Everybody's like, why are you reading the books? You've been an officer for, yeah, I know I've been an officer a long time. But again, if you're teaching these candidates this, we all need to know it because somebody thought it was important enough to put it on a promotional exam. Let's read it. Let's see what it says. Now, I'll hold my own opinions about the books, but I'm still reading them because I want to know what they're being taught. I want to know what they're studying, what's going to require them. And because you know what? That's kind of how they're going to operate. They're going to, you know, in promotional processes, unfortunately, sometimes it's nothing more than regurgitation of facts as it needs to be. But at some point, that application has to make it out into the street. So we have to get them all together. And that includes the instructors. And if you think a firefighter's opinion is hard to change, try to change an instructor's opinion. When we've been teaching at an academy for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. In some cases, I'm at my academy 32 years. I read the new textbook every time it comes out. Why? Because the curriculum changes. Now the UL, Fire Service Research Institute, is putting this science, saying, here it is. Here's what it does. Here's the proof. You want the numbers? Here's the numbers. We put it in a nice package. We put it on a platter. We put a bow around it. We wrapped it in paper. Here it is. And I will throw this question out. I threw this question out 2 weeks ago of all my instructor brethren that are either listening to this podcast or teaching at an academy. When was the last time you looked at your curriculum and said, man, this is not where we need to be today? And a lot of it is like that. There are not many. Let me rephrase that. To find an educational institute for fire service education that is proactive is becoming rarer as we go. Now, I do a lot of my own private training. I don't use programs that are purchased. I write my own stuff, and I write my own stuff based on research. Unfortunately, there's a lot of training that is out there that is saturating the service, that is making it very difficult to separate the really, really spot on stuff to the stuff that's not. And the messages that are being put out, in some cases are very good, in some cases are questionable at best. So we really need to put everybody together and say, okay, here's the end result. Here's where we need to be. The department needs to do this. Let's put everybody together. Whether you're a career or volunteer, I don't care. Let's put everybody together that you play with in the sandbox on a first alarm assignment. All right. Here's where we should be. Here's what we need to do. Here's our automatic aid companies. Here's what you should expect. Here's our training officers in our departments. I'm the training officer in my department. I'm putting everybody through the FSRI program. Why would I rewrite what's already there? The stuff is accurate. The science is there. It's free. It's right. My chief has no complaints. There's no cost to it. You have a captive audience. You're sitting in the firehouse. One a month, you do. One every other month, you do. Let's start moving the policies in this direction. And then let's go out and practice it at the fire academies to show how it works. And what would we do based on the application, based on what's coming to the scene? Let's do transitional attack. Let's do offensive attack. Let's do transitional and roll into offensive and put that all together and see what it does and see what works for you and how you and what you need to pull it off. Are there going to be challenges with it? Sure. Absolutely. We're going to do it right the first time every time? Absolutely not. That's unrealistic. In the pursuit of perfection, excellence is usually lost. I hate to say it. We focus so much on doing everything, you know, 100% right, that even just being excellent at this is where we should be. But it requires change. And change, as I said before, Steve, is not something that the fire service embraces a lot, you know?
Very true. And you said the motto that represents that, which is the two things that firefighters hate the most is change and status quo.
Absolutely. Unfortunately.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, you've made some key points here in this part about can we, as the fire service, and each individual member of the fire service, can we bring ourselves to the point where we can move away and say our history is important to us because that's what brought us to where we are today, but things changed for them just like they're changing for us, and they adapted, and adapt and overcome. That's what it's all about, and we have to learn today and be willing to say, wow, that old method that we were using 8 years ago just doesn't fit today, for what we need. And what can we do about it to make ourselves better and bring ourselves up to date for what we really do need for today's and possibly tomorrow's fire or tomorrow's rescue or whatever else?
Oh, I would agree. And the documents do that. I really believe that. NFPA does that. And, Steve, you and I have spent probably the better part of 80 years combined putting fires out. I mean, and when we have seen some changes, and I'm sure when you started, you probably started like I did. You got a long 3/4 coat, pull-up boots, set of fireball gloves, and a helmet. If you're lucky, you got a hood. And then we have now morphed into a protective ensemble that people complain about that's too heavy, too bulky. But when you take a look at the alternative and you had the people that said, well, my ears start to burn, I know I'm in too far, I'm never going to wait that long. I mean, I was trained never throw water at smoke. Well, now,
right.
And Brother Andy Starnes and I, preach this all the time with thermal imaging. Well, if you're going into a smoke-filled environment without a thermal imager today, you're a fool. It's a fool's errand. And you look at the numbers. Line of duty deaths, 78% of the time, the tick is left on a rig. What are you doing? We're handing you the equipment. And here's another diatribe that I have. When a fire department buys equipment, we do not embrace technology. We embrace technology, but we don't embrace training very much.
Right.
We really don't. You think about three things that a salesman, and this is not a knock on salesman, believe me, it's not. But three things that the salesmen bring to a firehouse after they buy the new piece of equipment. They bring the piece they bought, they bring the bill and a box of donuts, and everybody's happy. It's very rare that salesman comes out and says, okay, why don't you get everybody together and we'll pick a day, or we'll pick a night, we'll pick a weekend day, or we'll go with you and we'll show you how to use this in an environment that it's designed to use. How about that? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, it would be fantastic, but to try to get them to the table with this, it's tough. And it's not, it's really not as new as everybody thinks it is. So for example, the minute they hear NFPA, oh, NFPA rules. All right, let me ask you this. What's your turnout gear rated to based on what standard? Oh, we follow NFPA. Okay. So if I walked into your firehouse and said, hey, guys, times are tough. We're just going to start buying jumpsuits. We're not going to buy NFPA turnout gear. You'd have an uprising. If we said your SCBA, whatever brand you use, are no longer going to be NFPA 1981 compliant. We're just going to go with the cheaper compliance, you'd probably have chaos in the apparatus bay. Now, if you said apparatus-wise, we're not going to adopt the light package that's approved on NFPA. The pump doesn't have to be third-party rated. How about that? I mean, you jump up and down. Fire service would go crazy. They would go nuts. Now, here we are, we're saying, okay, here's the safest way to do this. Here's a document. And you're right. What's they saying? Oh, you want me to change? It's the same sanctioning body that keeps you safe in your turnout gear and in the air you breathe and the apparatus you ride. Why are you arguing about that? In the big picture, it really doesn't make any sense. Right. And I asked this question to the officers. Oh, you don't want to follow that? Okay, what do you got? What are you basing your policy on? And I hear it all the time, tradition. Well,
tradition.
Yeah, come on. I mean, where's your data? Data to prove that what you're doing is absolutely the right thing to do. The big difference between putting a fire out and burning a fire down to the level that you can perform at, and we've seen it. I'm sure you've seen your share. I've seen my share of them as well. So it's going to take some change.
I want to close this segment with a tragic story from my first department in North Carolina. The life belts had come out, and the sales person for the belt came to our station that day. I was working, so I didn't see it as it happened. But they want to change the clasp on the belt to tie to the wire. And our captain said, "I think this one works really good. I mean, we've pushed, we've pulled, we've used it many different ways, many different heights. It's great. It stands it." He goes, "And I really don't like the look of this other clasp." And the salesman said, "Don't worry, it's much better than what you already have. We made that one, but this one's better." And so the captain said, "All right, well, let's give it a try." So they switched it out, and our mechanic, may he rest in peace, went up. We put up our snorkel. We had a 75-foot snorkel, put him up. He climbed up fast, put his belt, climbed up the rail, went up to the top, and then the salesman wanted him to go freehand, just by the belt. He did, and he fell in front of 13 second graders.
He
was seriously injured, broken back, became a paraplegic, life became very, very difficult for him, of course, and subsequently he passed long-term injuries and other things. But this is why you need to know, and like I said, same thing. I in my civilian job, I dealt with lots of salespeople, and you can tell the good from the bad from the mediocre. And this, our captain was not happy with the presentation. He didn't like the design, what he could see from it, and he was right from the get-go. He was right from the get-go. So sometimes, whether it's belts, whether it's ropes, whatever it is, a salesperson may go out of their way to try to make that sale, even if it's not exactly 100% accurate. And that, as we learned in our department back then, that can take a terrible, terrible price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very sorry to hear about that.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break with our guest, Captain Mike Daly. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about KTF, Kill the Flashover. So those of you watching the video, you won't see anything different. Those of you listening to the audio, well, you know how it works. We're going to take a little break. There'll be a few public service announcements, and then we'll be right back with Captain Mike Daly as we continue and talking about Kill the Flashover. So as always, we hope you'll please stay tuned. We'll be right back. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, "Stations 14 and 16, working residential structure." And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. "I'll shake it off in an hour," you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, "Yeah, that's more like it," and you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. "Hey, guys," you call out. I'm not feeling well." And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. Our guest is Captain Mike Daly, a firefighter with over 37 years of experience on the job. He's also an instructor. He's also a member of KTF, which we're going to be talking about momentarily. Kill the Flashover. He's a teacher. He's actually the president. Are you still the president, Cap?
Yeah. Yes.
He is still the president of Kill the Flashover, along with our good friend and close comrade, especially with Five Alarm Task Force Corp, our nonprofit, brother Andy Starnes and brother Nick Higgins from the Firehouse Tribune. And to know that Andy, I've known Andy and KTF since I first met him on social media, and he was one of the people who really took me in, welcomed me, shared me with other firefighters, hooking me up, and was one of the ones who said, you know, this might not be an idea if you do a podcast. You have a radio background, and you know, you really know a lot of stuff from your time that you could bring. It's important for the discussion. Well, here we are, seven years later, and still doing it. So since we've talking about Brother Andy and Brother John and Brother John Hayowick, who's right next door to you also up in that same neighborhood, and Nick's right in New Jersey as well, is Kill the Flashover. So for those who may not know what Kill the Flashover is, let's start with that, please, and then we'll proceed from there.
Sure. So Kill the Flashover actually started, like a lot of great ideas start, on a napkin in a bar or in a restaurant. Chief Joe Starnes, Chief Jay Coy, Chief Sean Oak, Chief Warren Whitley, and if Jim Mast, Chief Jim Maston as well, some of the founding fathers that put this together said, you know what, we're tired of seeing firefighters that wind up getting injured or, God forbid, killed in the line of duty from thermal insult, when especially a lot of these are avoidable. And if you look at NIOSH reports, and if you start to look at the top three causes that are most common, I will tell you that 90% of the time you will see a very poor or limited understanding of fire behavior and how the application is made, strategy and tactics. But with that, our founding fathers, if you will, started off with this task to educate the fire service and started to bring people in with their message and started to grow exponentially, I would say, to where we have now become a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We have now developed curriculum that now exceeds the Fire and Emergency Service higher education requirements for colleges, FESCI requirements, which now can qualify for educational credit towards fire science degrees. We've trained a couple thousand students in the last 12 years. We now have the fall semester will be coming up starting in September. We're just finishing up our spring semester. We use a full online Canvas support LMS system. So now the students literally take their tests, do their reading all electronically. We post midterm grades, we post exams. This is truly gone. What I like to think is we've made Chief Starnes and everybody else proud of where we've taken their idea and moving it forward. I like to think that Chief Starnes is still involved with us. Chief Coy still helps us wherever he can. Chief Whitley is our educational director at this point, who runs Fire Behavior University. We've developed curriculum through approved FESHI documentation of books. We've downloaded as many free books as we can for the students as well. And the information to me is second to none. And it's based a lot on the science that we're seeing today. So one thing that I think Kill the Flashover does, it brings a lot of like-minded people together to say, okay, we agree, this has to get better. How can we do it? I have a picture that I have in my files. It's probably one of my favorite pictures that I have. In 2015, I think, was the second or third year I was out at Kill the Flashover. And Chief Davis from Oak Grove Fire Department in Shelby, North Carolina, is a huge advocate of ours. Can't say enough about Chief Davis and the people from Oak Grove Fire Department. One of his engines was sitting in front of this house we were using. And Chief Starnes had this great idea. He says, I want to get a picture of everybody's helmet. Well, there's a stack of helmets, probably 34 or 38 helmets on the front bumper of Oak Grove Fire Department. And these helmets are from all over the country, all over the world. We had people from all over the world who came in. This year, we were just stacked with people and a lot of great support. And it's a picture, just it always reminds me of, listen, you know, we all agree that things have to get better. And there's so many like-minded people in the world that want to make it better. And I'm just blessed that I was indoctrinated through Chief Starnes to do this and still be able to provide some positive influence when it comes to Kill the Flashover and the message that comes out.
Well, one thing, since you mentioned Chief Starnes, I want to give a shout out to Brother Andy's wife and the team that got Chief Starnes to FDIC. They got him there safe and sound. And I just think they definitely were the angels for that mission that took care of that. I think it was great. I was so happy to see that posting on social media that he was there. You know, we both love Andy. I mean, he's just one of those people absolutely dedicated to the fire service and making better and taking care of the people in our communities. That's his priorities, his faith, his family, and being a good firefighter, being a good instructor and teacher, and sharing that, like you and like so many, like Brother John Dixon, John Hayowick, and Nick, all these people I've had the honor and the privilege to meet over the years who share my passion for teaching and education, that we're never too old to learn and we can never stop teaching what we've learned to others coming up behind us. And no matter what profession it's in, but for ours, the one that we love, being firefighters, it's incumbent upon us to know that we must pass on our experiences, what we learned to the group coming in behind us, because they're already learning stuff that we didn't. And so if we can fill in the background to what they're learning for today, I think that makes for a better fire service all the way around.
I would agree. And I think that's a big part of our mission. It's amazing. And I'm going to quote Chief Joe Starnes. We don't know what we don't know. And the amazing thing with this great group of people, after you complete the two semesters of Fire Behavior University, you get an opportunity to earn what we call your craftsman accreditation, where you have to come up with a hypothesis that you try to prove or disprove and determine where that falls into fire behavior and how that works. I had gone through it as well. I have my craftsman as well. And my hypothesis was about air track and moisture content being drawn into a compartment when a room reaches lean flashover at ceiling, and how much air will it pull, airspeed, things like that. So right now we have three members that are ready to do their craftsman accreditation. And again, a lot of it is based on some of the things that we just don't know. And the nice thing about that is we can all get together and try to figure that out, what we know and what we don't know. So, for example, Brother Dixon has a great hypothesis that we're going to try to prove or disprove. Vertical ventilation in a compartment fire that reaches flashover. Will that vertical ventilation dynamically switch from a intake for an exhaust and be able to support enough air to keep the fire going? We don't know. We really don't know. We're going to find out. One of the other things that we're trying to figure out how we can measure and prove is how we can prove Thornton's rule 100 years later. Now, for those that are listening who don't know anything about who W.M. Thornton was, in 1917, W.M. Thornton was a scientist who discovered that the amount of energy that comes off a compartment fire fuel load is constant. The only variable that can change that is the amount of air that comes into the compartment. Now, in 1970s, it was proven by the NIST when they did their fire flow calculation. So for all of you pump operators out there that swear by the length times width divided by 3 calculation for water flow, welcome to Thornton's rule. That's where that came from. The big question we had the other day, and it's amazing, we were just sitting at an online Zoom meeting. We were talking about the curriculum we were just finishing up, and we were talking about Thornton's rule about air. And I forget who asked the question. They said, hey, you think Thornton's rule is still accurate with the high energy heat release fuels that we have in the same size compartment? And we all kind of looked at each other and we said, definitely, maybe. So now an idea is born. So one of our next ideas at one of our next burns we're going to do is try to compartmentize and measure a volume of air versus heat output and see if Thornton's rule is still accurate, but his measurement of opening is somewhere around 25% of the overall square footage of the compartment. So if it's a 10 by 10 room, you need 25 square feet of opening. Pull enough air in to get a room to flash over. So the question becomes now, with the high energy fuels we're dealing with today, high energy heat release rate fuels need more air. Well, our question really is, how much more air? And what happens if it doesn't have this? What if it has the same amount of air as before? And the answer, definitely maybe. Stay tuned. We're going to find out.
That's great. It's a great example. I also like watching the videos on social media from Andy and the Max Firebox team, because they're able to provide great learning in a very small container that has changed, I would say, at least 3 of my concepts that I thought about how fires work and how we apply water and stuff like that. And the first time I saw them, Andy's lesson, where they got the fire going in the box and they spray the door of the box, and all of a sudden you have this very easy door to open and an easy way to make start going inside, only because you sprayed a couple hundred gallons of water on the front door. Well, mm-hmm. We never thought of it before because we thought we had to go through the front door to do right. It. No matter what we were going to meet on the other side. This was simply, in my mind, brilliant. Why hadn't we been thought of? Why didn't anybody else think of this before? But today, exactly.
It's the concept of moisture conditioning that nobody thinks about because, and again, Steve, I'll talk about our indoctrination where you can't throw water at smoke. Boy, if somebody changed that thought process 30 years ago, we'd probably be much further ahead.
Right. So I think that what Kill the Flashover can do for those of you who are listening, and again, Kill the Flashover doesn't make any difference if you're career, volunteer, WUI, they want students. If you want to be a student, they're willing to teach if you're willing to learn. And that's what you have to remember. And we just said it a moment ago, but for Mike and me, there is no arguing the fact that as a firefighter, you must continue to learn. No matter what tradition you have in your department, and a lot of them are wonderful, heartwarming, who we are as firefighters all apply, but you also have to learn what's happening today and what may be happening tomorrow. And the only way to do so is to continue to be a student as a firefighter. Maybe it's local, maybe it's a regional meeting, maybe it's a national meeting. Either way, any of those will afford you the opportunity to learn, to get a good grasp of the ideas presented and make sure you feel comfortable with them. And then when you do, and you hightail it back to your department, then you got to share that with other people because you have to be the teacher at that point. And that's what killed the flashover. The names that Mike has shared with us this morning, these are some of the great names from 25, 30 years ago who made inroads in the fire service of how to keep us safer and how to make the safest but most effective attacks when necessary. And that's what it's about. It's not, I hate to use the old cliche, but it's not rocket science. It's simply using fire science.
And the amazing thing about this, and this is the concept that we embrace as well, Steve, we don't lose, we learn. If you come up with a hypothesis and it doesn't pan out the way we want, okay, we still learn something. We don't say, okay, that was a failure. It wasn't a failure. You know, science is all about being naive at some point where you don't believe certain things in that, or you do believe certain things until they're proven differently. And the reality of it is we don't fail. We just educate better. And that's where a lot of the people who participate with us stand on this. I mean, we had an opportunity about 4 years ago to bring the Hydrovent applicator into one of our burns, and the rep came down. We did a compartment fire, used it, did some great things. Is it for every application? No, but we found some of the things that it works really great for, and it's a very useful tool in the fire service. Does it look like a normal nozzle? No. Does it scare people away? Probably. Does it work? Yeah, absolutely. You know, fog nails, where people would not even think about piercing nozzles anymore. When I got on a fire service, the first fire truck I got on in a volunteer department I belonged, we had a piercing nozzle. And they're like, well, I'm like, what is that thing? Like, I would never use that. And today, now the fog nail is a great tool for difficult compartments to reach, you know, reintroduction of the Bresnan distributor on how it's flowed and the best place for it and how to use it in below grade spaces. Now with a lot of low below grade, variable grade structures, it's becoming much more prevalent to be that first line of effect. How can we use it? How can we use it better? All of the things that we do, we all bring these ideas and we say, okay, here's what we want to do. And here's how are we going to measure it? What's our benchmarks? What's our data points? And then we say, all right, based on this, this is what this does. Okay, well, then we know that. We didn't lose, we learned. Even if it didn't do exactly what we thought it was going to do, well, now we know exactly what it's going to do because we learned what to do. And I think that's where a lot of people in the fire service are sketchy or skeptical. You know, well, what happens if we have to change? Well, okay. Well, what happens if you don't? What happens if you come down and you witness this and then you go, oh, wow, it really works. All right. Well, now you witnessed it. Well, where's your argument? Where's your data? I mean, here's our data that we'll prove it, you know, and we share a lot of the information that we prove. We have the video, and I'm sure as you've seen Andy's, we are reworking our YouTube channel. I am not the technology person on this squad, believe me. Chief Fling out of Dix Hills is our technology guru. Does a great job keeping our website up. We're working on trying to get some video spaces for the members to actually be able to look at some of this stuff for references beyond just being in the classroom. We're trying to get our YouTube channel back up so we can share some of this data and get it out there. So there's a lot of good things happening. But I think just like we talked about earlier today with the embracement of change in the fire service on how we would operate, well, and I'm going to quote Chief Joe Starnes again. We don't know what we don't know. And we're always learning. 3+ decades in the fire service. And I'm still a student of this great profession that I decided to embrace.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's those are some of the most important words you said today, is that you're 37 plus years in and you're still a student of the craft. You didn't say you're the master. You said, I'm a student of the craft. And, you know, what you mentioned before about those nozzles, I remember the first time, not that I need them down here in South Florida, but when I was in North Carolina, first time I saw a Acela nozzle. I had never been in the fire service before. I never intended to be a firefighter. It just kind of happened. Life took me down a crazy path. But then we had the first fire that the chief said, you guys cut a hole in the floor and put that nozzle down there and you're going to use that. I said, what? That's not going to do jack. I mean, we got to get in there. Now we put it in. We ran it about 2 minutes and that basement was done, finished. Wisps of smoke was all that was left. And I said, who the hell knew to invent something like that? And we had a piercing, an old style, the old piercing nozzle as well on our snorkel. So yes, innovations come out and that's good for any, I don't care, any professional field. You need innovations. You need growth to learn more and to be better and do better. But sometimes it's not clear to us when we first see it.
We get that blinder look that, this tool is only good for that. And, you know, it's funny you segue into the Acela nozzle. You know what we found out? Great on attic fires. Great on attic fires. We would have said, hey, what if we cut a hole in the roof and threw it in the roof? Maybe. Let's go find out. And what do you know? Worked great.
There you go. So something simple, 50 years old, right? 50 years old piece of equipment. We sat on the back bumper. Had no idea what we could use it for. Yes, they told me, but I said, what's that going to really do? Come on. You got to be in there with a nozzle, whether it's the fog nozzle, you're going to go smooth, whatever. We got to be in there with it. No, we don't. And it's fast. It's much less dangerous because we're not making entry. It does the job most of the time. And people didn't have to risk themselves to knock it down. That's a good day in the fire service.
Again, it's a tool in the toolbox. As Chief Byrne said before, it all depends. Depends what I see when I show up. It's another tool in the toolbox. And that's what we preach. And we get this all the time with nozzles and equipment. And I get this all the time. All right, KTF, what's KTF's stand or what's your stand? And I'm only going to speak for myself. But what's your stand on nozzles? I get this all the time. What's your stand on nozzles? You're the fire behavior guy. You're the fire behavior guru. What's your stand on nozzle? What's the best nozzle? Here's the best nozzle. The best nozzle is the one that the operator knows how to use the best way. Period. Whether you're, as Andy, Chief Brother Andy says, are you a smoothbore Baptist or a combination Christian? I really don't care. If you can't use that nozzle correctly, it doesn't matter. I can give you a brick. The result's going to be the same. Best nozzle is the one that you know how to use competently. So.
That's a great way of looking at it. Now, if people want to get in touch with Kill the Flashover, if they're interested and say, hey, can I get some more information? Maybe I want to be a student. How do they reach out? Because we're going to put this in the show notes.
Our website is up and running, killtheflashover.com. If you go there, you can navigate to Fire Behavior University. There's a page there on what the class is all about, what the topics are, what curriculum we use. We run the entire curriculum every year. We're just finishing part two up. Final exam actually is today. As a matter of fact, yeah. No, I'm sorry. It's next week. It's the 2 weeks after Indy. So today we're going to be doing a review, final review for the students. Next Wednesday, they'll sit for the exam. And then we'll be off for the summer, and we're not off. We are actually going to actually have a couple of meetings. Curriculum committee is going to get together and say, okay, what worked, what didn't work? What do we need to change? Did we find a better resource for this? Or did we find better videos for this? Do we need, and everybody that sits at our level, if you will, the ones that are on that committee, we don't say, okay, this is the way it's going to be. No, this is what we do. Here's what we think. We have 12 or 15 senior members and go, okay, folks, give us an opinion. Here's where the curriculum's at. This is where we need to go. Everybody that we've indoctrinated in at the senior level here, has all of the curriculum, has the books, has the data that we use, and say, okay, well, is this the best way to serve this? Or, you know, and it takes a month or two of fine tuning every time we run it, because we always see things that work really well. And then we see things, well, you know what? I can understand why the student was a little confused at this point. So let's address that, fix that. And so we'll be fine tuning again. We'll be ready to go up in the fall, probably. Don't quote me on this, but probably mid-September, probably after the third weekend, we'll probably be looking to kick off again. And we'll probably go till the beginning of December with the next semester of Five Year University. So we put out the announcement usually 6 weeks in advance for anybody that wants to enroll. So if you follow us on social media, we have a Facebook page, Kill the Flashover. You can check our website regularly. We're up on Twitter as well at Kill the Flashover. So we're trying to put out as much information as we can. And our emails.
Right. I'm sorry.
All our emails are actually linked as well. There's an email link on each site. So if you want, just click that. Again, our technology guru, Chief Ling, is always checking emails and kicking them where they need to go. And somebody will get back to you within 24 hours.
Yeah. Chief Ling is a great guy. He, matter of fact, every podcast we do, Face Piece On, we do a PSA for Face Piece On that came from Chief Ling. Matter of fact, I reached out to him about 6 weeks ago and said, I'd love to have you come back, Chief.
Great guy.
Great guy. Again, a walking book of fire knowledge and experience. And absolutely. People say, well, you know, Dick Sells, that's pretty quiet. Well, let me tell you something. First time he was here, this guy has kicked a lot of fire butt in his time, even when he was chief of the department then.
Let me tell you, Dick Sells is a busy, progressive fire department.
There sure is.
There's a lot of great firefighters up in that section of that area. And Chief Fling is a true consummate professional, knows what he's talking about. Believe me, he's crawled his share of hallways. So he is a very, 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 very competent instructor and firefighter.
Another question is, are there any minimum requirements for somebody to apply for KTF training?
No. However, we would rather you had a couple of years of experience. We would prefer you at least 3 years of experience. You want to come right out of recruit school and come in, you're more than welcome to. We do require that you finish recruit school within, you know, once you've done that and you're interested. Some of the students have actually come in that have 10 or 15 years. Some are captain and battalion chief level, and they want to start at the second semester because that's just the way it rolls. And we've allowed that. But for those that are getting their initial indoctrination into something like this, we would recommend going in through part one, which is more of the science base, which is the one that we're actually starting off in September. So we literally just finished part two. Next week will be the final. And then we'll be kicking off part one again in the fall. So
that's good to know. And so if you are, we're going to put the contact information in the show notes. But if you are interested, all you have to do is go to the website, killtheflashover.com, and you're going to look for the Fire Behavior University tab, and then you can read through, have a good understanding before you send your submission in. Know what you're getting into, okay? This is not a bunch of guys sitting around the kitchen table just shooting the bull about, oh, you know, I remember this fire when we did this. And just be careful, cut your water flow. No, this is a fully engrossing educational experience. And yeah, knowing some of you folks as I do, I can tell you folks that these people are dedicated to you. That's who they're dedicated to. Besides taking care of the people and the property in their communities, they are dedicated to each and every firefighter who wants to come through this class to make them a better firefighter. And I've seen better people coming out of it as well. You're a better person after it, because sometimes when you learn more, you actually grow. as a person and as a professional, rather than just assuming, as we know what that word results in, that you know everything you need to know to do the job. And as the captain said, as every one of our fire guests has said, going all the way back, we were very blessed to have Chief Bruno on in the early days of the podcast. And that was thanks to my good friend, Chief Dennis Rubin, who just got appointed as the interim chief in Kansas City, Kansas, as the fire department there. But he brought Chief Bruno to the show. And, you know, I worship this man starting in 77 with his first article in Firehouse Magazine. He was the guru to me and a couple of my friends. We all got in at the same time in this department. And to meet him, I met him once at the one of the early Firehouse Expos in Baltimore. In those days when it was there, I met him there, which was a privilege. And I just figured a shake of the hand and he'd walk away. No, he said, "Are you a firefighter?" No, I said, "No, I was, but I got hurt." And he goes, "What happened? Tell me." I mean, he probably stood there 5 or 6 minutes. There were hundreds of people wanting to talk to him. And I just went to meet him and shake hands. But that kind of told me what I learned from other people a lot later. This is the man who he was. Every firefighter was important to him. And I was lucky to have our late friend Bobby Halton on the show. And Bobby probably did the longest podcast I ever did, almost 3 hours. But my God, was that man brilliant. And he could cite page, paragraph of books. This is where you will find this information. Go there, look at, read it, and you will see. He was great that way. Great that way.
No, yeah, man. He knew everybody. He knew everybody's name. I haven't seen him in 7 years. He knew me like that. And to me, when you're that connected into the service, like he was, there's just a wealth of knowledge, unfortunately, that passed with him. But there was a guy that just, yeah, had the wherewithal to make the service much better.
Oh, yeah.
While he was in it. He really did.
Both those gentlemen really changed the face of the fire service on all aspects. They really were. They were great people. Well, Cap, I can't thank you enough for taking time from a very busy schedule, I know, to spend a little bit with us today. As always, great information to share with our viewers and listeners. The NFPA 1700, the new criteria that is absorbing 1710 and 1720. If you're one of those firefighters that says, "Well, I'll leave that to the officers and stuff," don't do that. You have an obligation to yourself, to your department, and to your community to learn as much as you can. You need to read the 1700. Read it over. Make sure you have a good understanding. And when you don't understand something, ask somebody about it. And if there's somebody in your department who doesn't know, post a question on social media. I guarantee there'll be great people, great firefighters, like Captain Daly, like Chief Starnes, Chief Andy Starnes, I mean, who will be willing to say, "Hey, let me tell you, read this, you'll see this little thing, and it'll help you understand that aspect of the criteria that they're addressing." And as Captain said today, this is a really unique and novel approach that they've taken, because in this case, they actually include implementation for your department. Now, is it custom tailored just to your department? No. But it gives you the ideas that your department will need to implement 1700 as it comes into the flow of what we have to do in our departments. And remember that everything that comes out of the NFPA is for our safety, is for our care, and the care that we share with our communities. Because if they don't have faith in us, we don't have a job to do. And you'll get no, what's the right word that's used today, but you'll get no traction if you can't produce the right way as a fire department. Because when you're trying to raise funds, you're not going to get them. You're trying to generate interest, you're not going to get it, because you'll have, whether it's true or not, you're going to have a tale out there about your department. All we ask is that you strive for one thing: be the best firefighter that you can be. Not like him, not like her, but for yourself. Look yourself in the mirror. And I love to use this all the time. Look yourself in the mirror, because that person in the mirror knows every secret you have. And they're going to, you say to them, do I need to study more? Yeah, you do. Okay, I guess I do, because that's the honest answer I got back. And if guys, oh, no, don't worry, you're all covered. You better change your mirrors. That's for sure. We'll have all the information on the show notes, but our sincere appreciation and thanks to Captain Mike Daly for, he's been one of our webinar teachers. He's been on the show a couple of times. So happy to have him back again, and hopefully get him to another webinar sometime in the not too distant future. Cap, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. It's always great talking with you. I love to learn with you. And I hope that our viewers and our listeners take everything you said today to heart and will make the decision to be one step better each day.
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity every time I'm invited, Steve, and I look forward to coming back and doing it again.
Good. I'd like to hear that. All right, folks, if you're watching the video, this will be the conclusion of the program. If you're listening to the audio, well, we'll be right back with a little bit more information and articles when we get back. So to all of you watching on the video, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Stay safe and stay well. And we'll be back. And by the way, I want to let you know that next month we have been able to get Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez back on the show. He is heads up the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in South Florida with the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Centers at the University of Miami Firefighter Cancer Initiative Program. So he'll be back with us next month. And boy, is there have been a lot of changes, a lot of progress since he was last on. So to all of you, thank you very much. Stay safe, stay well, and let's not forget to take care of each other. Bye-bye for now.
You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Yeah, you, it's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your CISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
We want to take a moment to tell you about some other great firefighting podcasts. First, I want to welcome my friend, Chief Arjuna George, who started his new podcast, Beneath the Helmet. You can find it on all major podcast platforms. Also, The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Soler. The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune. Station Talk with Nick Higgins and Assistant Chief Tom Marciano. Flow and Vent. The Troubleshooter with Assistant Chief Tom Marciano. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia Volunteers. Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzow. Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss. Code 3, The Firefighters Podcast. Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. Fire Rescue Show. Average Jake Firefighter and Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must always be willing to learn. That's what we do.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5-Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Captain Mike Daly, for joining us to discuss the new NFPA Standard 1700 and the programs from Kill the Flashover. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5-Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, Hass Alert, Pry Guide Levers and Nesta Bars, the EFT Corporation, 911lifestyle.com, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us, have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce, on Facebook at facebook.com/5, A Apple, T Tango, F Foxtrot, C Charlie. And on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.